for the invitation. Can anybody hear me? Here and there?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So so this is a joint project with Sachin Gautam, who is in this audience and in the screen from Bonn. So the goals of what I'm going to talk about today are twofold. So I'd like to try and shed some light. About elliptic quantum groups, and hopefully not too much heat. And in particular, I'd like to propose a definition of their finite dimensional representations. And then number two, I'd like to classify these irreducible finite dimensional representations. Now, maybe let me just say one word about why one is even necessary. After all, we all know how to define the representations of an algebra, so why is there any effort involved in one? So we all know that quantum groups are not groups. Okay, so we all know that. And the point is that elliptic quantum groups are elliptic, but they're not quantum groups. Not my fault. So this is why it takes a little bit of thought to kind of wrap your head around elliptic quantum groups. And this is something that certainly Sachin and I were confused about for a long time. And in fact, elliptic quantum groups in some natural way are not even algebras. So that's why it's just defining a category of representations takes a little bit of work. Okay, so let me also say that this whole area was started by Felder almost 25 years ago. So I wanted to start by giving you some background and to tell you some preliminary and precursor definitions of elliptic quantum groups. So maybe a natural place to start is the when you talk about quantum groups, are the quantum Young-Baxter equations, which you probably all know. So okay. So what am I writing here? So this R is a meromorphic function, is a meromorphic matrix valued function. So V is some finite dimensional vector space over C. And then R12 just means R tensor 1. R23 means 1 tensor R, and so on. And then uij means ui minus uj. Okay, so this is a system of equations for this function, in three variables, u1, u2, u3, for this matrix valued function. Okay, so this is really where quantum groups were born, and you can indeed ask now, so where is the quantum and there's really two schools of thought on this. So the chronologically, the first answer is the answer of Fadeyev Rosh Tichin. Talk to John, and in a nutshell, it goes as follows. You start from R, a solution to these Young-Baxter equations. There is a tensor category, call it rep R. I'll tell you what it looks like in a moment. It's a very concrete category with a fiber functor, say F, two vector spaces. And so from there, I'm paraphrasing slightly with their construction, you can just associate HR, which is the endomorphism on the morphisms of this fiber function, and this is a Hopf algebra. Okay. And just to give you the flavor of rep R. So what does it look like? It's, again, it's a very concrete category. So an object here is a pair W L, where W is a finite dimensional vector space over C, and L is a meromorphic function with values in the automorphisms of V, V being your initial representation and W being this representation, such that the relation, exactly the relation I wrote above, but with some replacements, R12, L13, L23 is equal to L23, L13, R12 holds. So the functional arguments are the same as before, so I'm not going to repeat them. And what is this an identity on? This is an identity on V, your reference representation, your tensor W tensor W. So examples of such a thing. You have a. Yes.
V tensor V tensor W.
I'm sorry. Yes, of course. Oops. Yes, thank you. So examples. You could take W L to be just the V you started from, and L to be R. So you could think of this as a vector or defining representation. Okay, that's an example of an object in this category. And you could take WL to be just a one-dimensional vector space and just the identity. So the constant meromorphic function acting as the identity on V tensor W. And you can think of this as the trivial representation. Okay. And there's a way to put a tensor structure on this. It's not very, well, maybe I'll just say WL tensor W prime L prime is W tensor W prime is a vector space, and then so this the L matrix for this tensor product is supposed to act on V tensor, W prime, and so you let L act on 1, 2, and L prime act on 1, 3, and then, okay. And so that's the tensor category, and the forgetful functor is just that you take the underlying vector space. Okay, so that's the first answer you might give to this question of where the quantum group is, and the second answer, due to Drinfeld, is sort of more intrinsic, and is the following: that maybe there is, or there might be, a Hopf algebra, so calligraphic H, with a universal R matrix calligraphic R in, say, H tensor H. Let me put a spectral parameter here, such that first of all, R calligraphic H satisfies the Young-Baxter equation in H tensor 3, to this Hopf algebra acts on the vector space you started from, and three, the solution, this concrete solution of the Young-Baxter equation you started from is the action on V tensor V of this universal R matrix. So this is in some sense more of a project than an actual answer. It's a project that certainly Drinfield carried out in a very great generality. Eraser.
They're all on the top boards.
Oh, I see.
Every top.
It's time to be short. Okay. Let me see. Okay. Now let me say something about the classification of our matrices. This is a result due to Beliaven and Drinfeld. And I'm mentioning it because this is really what prompted Felder to sort of introduce elliptic quantum groups. So we're going to suppose that our solution of the Young-Baxter equations is of the form 1 plus h bar little r. So we're going to assume that this is a deformation problem. It's r starts at 1, and then there's a 1 jet, which is little r. And then it's a little easy exercise. The Young-Baxter equations on capital R imply that this little r satisfies the following equation: r12 u12, r13 u13, plus r23 u23, plus R13 U13 R23 U23 is equal to 0. And these are known as the classical Young-Baxter equations. Okay. And we also have a kind of car wash system here. It looks really cool what they do in Bonn with the with the board. So, what is the theorem? And so, as you see, this equation, you can think of it as valued in a Lie algebra. So let's take such a Lie algebra. So let's take G to be a simple Lie algebra over C, and R solution of the classical Young-Baxter equations with values in G, which is non-degenerate in a sense that I won't make precise. Then the result is, first of all, that R only has simple poles, and they form a discrete subgroup gamma of the complex plane. And two, so if gamma is trivial, or sorry, it's just the origin, then R is equivalent to a rational solution. In other words, there's a notion of gauge transformation, and then R turns out to be a rational function of its parameter, of its argument. If gamma is rank 1, then R is equivalent to a trigonometric solution, meaning a rational function of e to the 2 pi iu. And three, if gamma is rank 2, then R is elliptic. It's equivalent to an elliptic solution. Okay, so all of these are very dangerous. Okay, so all of these are good news, and the not so good news is if this lattice of poles is of rank 2, then G is of type A. And so one takeaway one thing you could take away from that is that elliptic quantum groups, whatever they are, only exist in type A. This wants to cover the good news. Okay, so I don't know where my number is. So then came along Felder, who was really undaunted by this what seeming no-go result, and he said that we should look instead not so at the Young-Baxter equations, but at the variant of these equations, which are called the dynamical quantum Young-Baxter equations, which he introduced for the purpose. And so the point is, so we started earlier from a finite dimensional complex vector space. We're going to give it a little bit more structure. We're going to assume that it has a weight decomposition. So it's acted upon semi-simply by an abelian Lie algebra. And then we're also going to look at a meromorphic function acting on G, on V tensor V. We're going to ask now that it's zero weight with respect to this weight decomposition. And I'm leaving blank here for a reason. And so we're going to write something that looks very much like what we wrote before. Okay, so far it looks like we haven't done anything. Now we're going to add another functional dependence. We're going to declare that that R should also be a function of an additional so-called dynamical parameter. Okay. And we're going to ask that something like this be true, but if that's all we were doing, we would just be asking to have a family of Young-Baxter equations, and that's not what we're doing. So the correct thing to do is to add shift. So let me write, and then I'll explain what these are. Okay, so I have to. So I just have to explain what this shift or dynamical notation means. So for example, what does R1 2 U lambda plus H3 mean? So I'll tell you what it means when it's acting on a triple of vectors in V. So it means leave V3 out, as was the case prior. So put R here, act on V1 tensor V2. But now we're going to remember that V3 has a weight, and we're going to shift the argument by that weight. Make sense? So R12 is still acting only on the first and the second tensor copies, but its dynamical argument gets shifted by the weight of the third arm. So it does see V3, which in the Young-Baxter equation, which I erased, was not happening. Okay, so I hope it's clear that this is not just some family version of the Young-Baxter equation. And so then, so Felder said, look at this, and then what did he also prove? What did he also point out? He said that elliptic solutions means elliptic in U, but as it turns out, they're also elliptic in lambda, exist in type AN. What does it mean, type AN? It means that you take V is equal to CN, and you have the diagonal matrices acting on it. Okay, and then moreover, elliptic solutions, again in U but also in lambda, solutions of its classical limits, so the dynamical but classical Young-Baxter equation. So it's an equation that looks like the one I still have there, but it has some additional terms, exist for all Lie types. Okay, so it looked.
Can you say again, what's this notation, GL sub H of V tensor V?
Yeah, maybe I should have just written automorphisms of V tensor V. So it's just automorphisms of V tensor V, but which are zero weight. Okay, So this is the first, somehow, let's call it definition 1.0 of elliptic quantum groups. This is due to Felder. So elliptic quantum groups are the quantum groups corresponding to elliptic solutions of the dynamical quantum Young-Baxter equations. Okay, so that. All right, so this looks like maybe it's not exactly a definition, it's a proposal for a definition. First of all, there's a question of what does it mean to correspond to? And also at this, just if I were to stop the talk here, you wouldn't even be sure that there are such things outside of type A, right? So this begs for more, and the more came not longer after that. But let me just say let me just first say that what does it mean corresponding to? So you can do, and certainly this Felder did that, you can start from R, a solution of the dynamical quantum Young-Baxter equation. You can associate some tensor category. I won't define it for you, but it has a very similar flavor to the one I gave you earlier. Okay, so it's pairs W and L satisfy some version, dynamical version of the RLL relations. It also has a fiber functor to vector spaces. And so you would think I will just take AHR to be the endomorphisms of F. Okay. Except that if you want to have a tensor functor, then you should not go to vector spaces. You should go to, first of all, vector spaces of the field of baromorphic functions on H star. Well, I'm denoting vec. And also, this is not, you have to put an appropriate tensor product in this category, which is not a symmetric tensor category. Okay. And this has to do with the fact that these equations are not local in these Young-Baxter equations, the dynamical Young-Baxter equations are not local. And so as a result, what comes out, this is not a Hopf algebra, but it's a Hopf algebra. So this is a notion that was formalized and studied in great detail by Attinghoff and collaborators, in particular, Varshenko. Okay. So you remember there were two schools of thought, and this is the dynamical version, of that first school of thought, which to a concrete solution of the Young-Baxter equation associated tensor category and its endomorphisms, and that was one way to produce a half algebra, in this case a half algebraoid. Now the question was still, okay, but what about this? Can this result be quantized? Can there be quantum solutions of the dynamical Young-Baxter equations for all Lie types? And this was provided by not long thereafter, so this by Ettinghoff, Schiffman, I guess in 98, and more or less simultaneously by Jimbo, Kono, Odake, who proved that elliptic solutions of the dynamical quantum Young-Baxter equations exist for any G simple over C and V finite dimensional representation of the quantum loop algebra.
A quick question.
Yes.
What's the base algebra for the Hopf algebraoid?
It's H star.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Yeah, it's H star, but viewed really as an abelian group. So there's some shifting happening on the base. Okay. And so I mean, just maybe somewhat cryptically, how do you produce such solutions? You take the R matrix of this quantum loop algebra, acting on V tensor V, and then you conjugate it by something called the fusion operator. So this is, I realize this is a little bit cryptic, but just to. Okay, so that's the, in a nutshell, the recipe of explaining the language of Ettinghoff and Schiffman. So not only do you produce solutions, but you produce them in some sense, you always do the same thing universally with respect to this finite dimensional representation of the quantum loop algebra. So this prompts you, this might prompt you to do a kind of definition 2.0, which is to say that the elliptic quantum group, U, Q, tau, G, is the quantum loop algebra of LG as an algebra with co-product, with the dynamical co-product, which would be the standard co-product on the quantum loop algebra, conjugated by this J lambda. Okay. And this point of view was certainly mostly, I would say, so Kono wrote a number of papers about this point of view. And now, so whenever there's a new release of an operating system, there's always some, or often there are some issues. And so I'd like to take issue with the, or some issues with some aspects of this definition. One issue, maybe that I'm talking very subjectively here, is that this is not really intrinsic. You're trying to define some object, which is elliptic quantum group, and you're defining it or its representations in terms of another. So this would be, I mean, to take a very bad, very rough analogy, as if you defined the representations of a simply connected group as the representations of the Lie algebra. That would not be the right thing to do. You might want to prove that these things are equivalent, even isomorphic, but that's not. And a related issue was that you would expect, whatever this elliptic quantum group is, you would expect to have a translation action of the elliptic curve, which should be a sort of symmetry, kind of reparametrizing it. And this is not true here. In other words, there is an action of C star on the quantum loop algebra. Quantum loop algebra means it maps from C star to G, quantized. So there is a dilation action of C star on that. But this action does not factor through the elliptic quantum group. So there's a couple of reasons why you might argue this is not quite the correct definition. And maybe jumping ahead a little bit, even if you don't take issue with any of those, the point is that whatever, at least until recently, there was, so until recently, there was no classification of irreducible representations of whatever your favorite definition of the quantum group is, even for G is equal to SL2.
Valeria?
Yes?
Where is Z on the right side of that definition?
It is there and it's not there. So yes, yeah. I'll say yes. So Andy is correctly asking, what happened to Z in that equation? Okay, and so I was a little bit fast. So the point is that this equation was an extrinsic equation. It happens on a representation V, right? And so this is a fusion operator, and it's acting on V tensor V, but not really V tensor V. It's V tensor V, which has been moved by Z. So remember, there's a C star action, okay? But this, if you like, this thing is pi of VZ tensor V of some universal object J, and that's what I'm writing there. So that's why you may want to get rid, as this is, right? It's R VZ tensor V of some. So you may want to get rid of the actual representation and just talk universally in the quantum loop algebra. Okay. Okay, so let me tell you. So now let me state our main result. You can find it. On the archive. So again, G is a semi-simple over C. So the first part of the result is that, maybe it's a strange thing to state, but there is a definition. So it's an existence result. But it's a constructive existence result. So there is a definition of a category which we call the category of finite dimensional representations of an elliptic quantum group G. Of G for any G, which is so has a few properties which we think are nice. Which is the first one is intrinsic. So what does it mean intrinsic? It means that we do not rely. It does not rest on the quantum loop algebra or some other quantum group to just jump and get the elliptic quantum loop. It's a direct definition. Okay.
Is it right to ask for like some functoriality or something? Like is.
It is, and it is functorial. With respect to, say, dyking diagram embeddings, I mean, yes, that's what you're asking, right? So it's uniform for all Lie types. And what I mean by that is just defined by some kind of generators and relations which you can plug in any Cartan matrix, right? It doesn't give particular prominence to type A, and it's valid for numerical values of the deformation parameter. So H here is a deformation parameter, so it's the Q or the H bar, and tau, a point in the upper half plane, so long as H has infinite order in the elliptic curve defined by tau. Okay, so we don't yet, I suppose, treat the kind of root of unity case. Okay. And again, for us, this the fact that we can take numerical values has some merit, because if you try to think about a little bit more about this picture I was describing here quickly, then you see that to actually even make that a coproduct with values in the quantum loop algebra, it's second tensor power, not some kind of completion, you have to start assuming that the elliptic modulus of the curve is formal, and so you don't really have an elliptic curve, and sort of an actual, you know, elliptic curve you can chew into. So that's the first result.
Larry,
yes.
Does this have a functor to the RLL definition of the elliptic quantum loop you mentioned earlier?
Not yet. So yes. Ah, yes. So Kevin rightly is asking, what is the relation between this definition, which I will state in a moment, and an RLL type definition? And the answer was not yet. So it's like, you know, that's like for the channel tunnel, you dig on both ends and hopefully you meet in the middle. So that I will say in a little while that there is actually a geometric definition of quantum, of elliptic quantum groups due to Aganacic and Okunkov, which starts from this FRT point of view. So they start from an actual production of R matrices. So they don't have, in some sense, generators and relations. We start from generators and relations. And then we'd like to meet in the middle in the sense that we haven't constructed yet the universal R matrix. So for now, when I say there is a category, I'll define it for you in a moment, I'll sketch it. But it's not, right now, we don't even know whether it's a sort of meromorphic braided tensor category. Okay, so it's some part of this is in. Oh, because we, well, okay, maybe I was a little too conservative in what I said. So we already know there's one tensor product on it, which is this Drinfeld coproduct. But you would expect to have another sort of more kind of orthodox Katz-Moody type coproduct, and that's what we're in the process of. Although actually, maybe I was also a bit too conservative in my answer to Kevin's question. So Sachin has proved actually that this definition that I'll give you in a second, in type A coincides with Felder's definition in type A. So by some Gauss decomposition. So maybe the short answer to your question is yes. Right, I said no, but I really meant to say yes. I mean, apparently this is becoming fashionable. So the second statement is that we have a classification in this of irreducible objects in this category, and these are classified by something I'll call elliptic Drinfeld polynomials. Okay, and I'll flesh this out in a second. And then three, before I do that, I just wanted to say that that one and two hold for an R arbitrary symmetrizable Kac-Moody algebra, so long as you replace finite dimensional by integrable plus category O. Rebel erasers. So let me just make a couple of remarks. So one is, this, if you like, is our kind of definition 3.0, in a sense. And it isn't particularly dependent of the previous, logically independent of the previous definitions. The second is that this classification extends the classification of UREP finite dimensional representations of the Yangian and the quantum loop algebra UQLG. So let me briefly remind you that if you take the Yangian, then the reps for that are in one-to-one correspondence with, so you take the symmetric powers of C, and you take that taken I times, where I is the nodes of the Dynkin diagram, Okay. Okay. So you can think of, say, an element here of, you know, in the nth symmetric power of C as being the roots of a monic polynomial on C. Likewise, is a classification due to Cherry-Presley. It says that the quantum loop algebra representations, the finite dimensional ones, are the symmetric powers of C star to that. And so what we prove is, of course, what you would have expected right from the start. Which is that representations of the elliptic quantum group, say, of irreducible representations of the elliptic quantum group, say, of SL2, are classified by the symmetric powers of the elliptic curve. So you can think of that colorfully as an elliptic drain field the zeros of an elliptic drain field polynomial, if you like. But anyway, that's what this is. Though the proof, I don't know if I have any time to say anything about the business, but the proof, these proofs are fairly similar. This proof is quite different because in this category there's some basic tools, basic representation theoretic tools, which are missing, such as Verma modules. So your basic kind of bread and butter is missing to construct objects. Okay, so so let me sketch what the definition of the representation, at least of for SL2, and then for any other G, you have to put some indices, and the relations become more complicated. So let me at least write it for SL2. So a finite dimensional an object in this category is. So it's a finite dimensional vector space V, which has a weight decomposition so Gothic H is the Cartan subalgebra of SL2, and so he's endowed with with three sets of operators, phi u and then x plus or minus u lambda. So u is a point in the complex plane and lambda is a point in the dual. And these objects, these and e. So you should think of these as, if you forget about lambda for a second, as generating functions. This, you would want these to be the kind of the commuting generators of this elliptic quantum group, and these would be the raising and lowering operators of this elliptic quantum group, if you expand them in the parameter u, except that that these at least have a dynamical dependence in lambda. So such that, so this, what are the conditions? So first of all, we ask that phi and x plus or minus are periodic in u and lambda in an appropriate way. We ask that phi is a weight zero, because it's supposed to be the commuting modes. And then we ask that these raising operators act as raising operators with respect to the weight. Maybe I should leave that here. So then relation three is that these phis are commuting, then okay, so this is a relation that links the commuting field with the raising and lowering fields. So it's theta u minus v plus or minus h bar, theta u minus v minus or plus h bar, x plus of v lambda plus or minus 2 h bar, plus or minus theta of 2 h bar, theta of lambda, theta of u minus v minus lambda minus or plus h bar. Okay, and then maybe there's two more relations, and I'll just say what they bear on. So there's a relation between x plus minus u lambda and x plus minus v lambda, and then there's a relation between x plus u lambda and x minus v lambda. So I'm going to skip them. I don't know that will be very useful to see them right away. So okay, so that's our definition for SL2. Okay, and maybe I should point out one thing is that we claim we have defined we have defined a category and we're calling it representations of the elliptic quantum group. But you can ask again the question I started from: where is the quantum group? And right now there is no quantum group. Right? There's no algebra here. So if you really wanted to force nature's hand, you could extract an algebra by saying, I choose a point on the complex plane or on the elliptic curve, and I expand all of these fields with respect to that point. Then I will get actual modes, And I could write all of these relations in terms of these modes. But maybe slightly subjectively, the point we take is that that's not a, I mean, it's not a really natural thing to do on an elliptic curve. There's no preferred point on the elliptic curve. So you either get an honest algebra at the cost of breaking some symmetry, or you stick with these, and then you have. So maybe it's a question of choice. And expanding things in mode is for example, what Kono did earlier in this formal setting that I briefly mentioned. Okay, what could I erase? Maybe here. And maybe let me repeat, maybe without writing, but orally, a comment I made is that, okay, so this is the category, and now you could say, can we classify irreducibles? And so you would want to do a highest weight classification, and you get going the way you would for Youngins and quantum loop algebra. You say that you have a finite dimensional irreducible, then you can find a highest weight vector in an appropriate sense. That would be something that's an eigenvector for these commuting fields, the phi u, okay? And then you say, okay, well, does that determine uniquely the representation? So you normally you would say, yes, it does, because there's a Verma module I can associate to that. But to have a Verma module, you have to have a triangular decomposition. And where is the triangular decomposition, since I'm kind of forbidding myself from expanding in modes? So there's no triangular decomposition, therefore it's not clear, at least to us, how to define a Verma module. So that basic tool is not there. And so the way we do it is we go back to quantum loop algebra and have a monodromy functor from there to actually produce the objects we want. But I can say a bit more about that if you're interested at the end, but let me just leave it at that. So I just wanted to mention that there's been recently other approaches to elliptic quantum groups, and I should definitely mention them. So there's an approach of Aganagic and Okunkov, so this is an approach within the sort of this kind of FRT paradigm, if you like, and they use a construction which they develop, which is an elliptic stable envelope, to construct elliptic solutions of the dynamical quantum Young-Baxter equations on V tensor V. And what is V? V is the equivariant elliptic cohomology of Nakajima quiver varieties. So as I was saying, this is a point of view which is it's a little different, a little bit of complementary. So because you're dealing with Nakajima quiver varieties, this is a wee bit more restrictive. So you have to restrict yourself to the simply laced case. At the same time, they deal with an arbitrary quiver, so at the same time, it's wildly more general. So we only use symmetric Katz-Moody algebra. So, for example, we can't say anything about the Jordan quiver, and they can say plenty of that, about that. So that's one point of view. So they're coming at it from this point of view of having the R matrix first, front and center. Within that context, as far as I'm aware, there is no classification of irreducibles. And there are, so far as I can tell, for now, no currents, which is what you really need to classify reducibles. So that's why I was saying that these are kind of complementary approaches. Okay, so that's one approach. Okay, maybe I can. And then there's another approach, which is geometric as that of Aganagic Okunkov is, but it's closer in spirit to this Drinfeld approach versus this FRT approach, which is due to Yaping Yang and and Feng Zhao. So this is also on the archive. Has no 18 months of the year, I guess. So also they start from a symmetric quiver. And what they do is they take the equivariant elliptic homology of an Akajima quiver variety. And they actually do this for any arbitrary oriented algebraic cohomology theory. And then they have the elliptic equivariant cohomology of a moduli space of representations of a pre-projective algebra. So this is this, they call this a cohomological whole algebra. So that's the first thing they do. Then they show that this action contains operators, if you like, which satisfy the commutation relations one through six. So within this cohomological whole algebra for elliptic homology, they find a solution of these commutation relations. And then they do something which I've been carefully avoiding doing, which I said many times. I said we're defining a category, but we never define the elliptic quantum group. And I said we don't really want to expand. And they don't expand, but they define what the elliptic quantum group is as an animal, as an algebraic animal. So their third result is that they define it, but they define something even better. They define a sheafified version of this. Okay. And they define it, they point out that it is an algebra, in fact, a bi-algebra object, but not in the category of vector spaces, in a meromorphic tensor category, which is also braided. And for G is equal to SL2, this category is, so you take coherent sheaves on all symmetric powers of your elliptic curve. There's a shuffle tensor product, which is essentially given by that ratio of theta functions I was writing as the structure constants of the elliptic quantum group. And then there's a non-trivial but rather simple abelian braiding. And they show that their sheafified version of the elliptic quantum group is actually, so to speak, a boring algebra. Boring algebra in sense of linear algebra, but in this more esoteric category as opposed to the category of vector spaces. So if you wanted to know what is a quantum group as an algebraic animal, well, this gives an answer. Okay, and I'll stop here.
We'll start with questions on the other side, as always.
Are there questions here?
Let's open it up to questions here then. If you were going to write down like an explicit finite dimensional representation, matrices obeying your relations 1 to 6, what kind of functions would be in those matrices?
Theta functions.
Just theta?
Yeah.
Can you repeat the question?
Sorry. So Andy was asking me yes, it's a fair question, is what does an actual representation of this thing look like? And so, yeah, so you could do C2, I mean, C2, and then you would just use theta functions as matrix coefficients. Essentially, if you like Yangians, you could take the vector representation of the Yangian and replace, so to speak, all rational functions by their theta analog. So theta of x becomes theta of x, and take or leave something that would give you a representation.
Are there other questions? All right, well, let's thank Valerio again.